The Leach Report Radio Network is on the air with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. Join in with the rest of Big Blue Nation to get the latest insights and opinions on your Kentucky Wildcats from an all-star lineup of guests. If you have a question for Tom or one of our guests, tweet him to @LeachReport or email to LeachReport@gmail.com. And you can call toll-free anywhere across the Commonwealth of Kentucky at 877-904-1080. Now, here's Tom.
Welcome into the Monday edition of the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. And as you might expect, we'll spend most of our time today looking back on a disappointing finish to the game at the Garden on Saturday between Kentucky and Seton Hall. We'll talk about it with John Clay from the Lexington Herald Leader, John Hale from the Courier-Journal, and Jeff Drummond from Cats Illustrated. Our guest lineup always presented by Sleep Outfitters. First half was brutally ugly at stretches. Each team had about a 12-minute stretch without making a basket. Then in the second half, turned into a heck of a game. And then he had a great shot by Keldon Johnson to send it to overtime, and then Kentucky could not close it out. Seems like there's I'm not as familiar with other schools, obviously. It seems like there's an inordinately large number of Kentucky shots that would have been more memorable had the Cats been able to get the win. I'm thinking of Sean Woods against Duke, Patrick Sparks against Michigan State, and even this one in a regular season game, but it was at the Garden. And if Kentucky goes on and wins, you know, that Keldon Johnson shot, we'll have a much better place in history than it's going to have, unfortunately. So we'll talk about all that on the show today. Let's get right to the Wildcat News of the Day, a service of Cardinal Point Financial Group. That's private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. We'll start with more hardware for Josh Allen. This one, the Lott Impact Trophy, was awarded last night to the Kentucky senior. So he gets the Bronco Nagurski Award, he gets the Chuck Bednarik Award, and now he gets the Ronnie Lott Impact Award. And this, the impact is for integrity, maturity, performance, academics, community, and tenacity. And he received it from the NFL Hall of Famer Ronnie Lott out in California last night. So it's been quite a busy week for Josh. Charlotte, Atlanta, California, Southern California for these awards presentations. Now it'll be back to football. And, of course, he did tweet out this past week that he is going to be playing in the bowl game. I would not have begrudged him at all sitting out given his draft status. But I must tell you, selfishly, it's going to be a lot of fun to watch him play one more time and against a good quarterback, McSorley from Penn State. That'll be really a fun matchup to watch down in the Citrus Bowl. Basketball, Kentucky falls in overtime to Seton Hall on the Miles Kale three-pointer. And yesterday, Tennessee took down number one Gonzaga, 76-73. The Zags, number one undefeated, more experienced than Kentucky, and they screwed up a defensive possession just as badly as Kentucky did on Seton Hall's last basket. It was a simple pick-and-pop play. Schofield had been killing him. Two guys go with the dribbler. Schofield pops back wide open for a three-pointer that won the game. Miles Kale gets open because three Kentucky guys converged on a dribbler in the lane when you know a three is the only thing that can beat you. And then he kicks it out to the top of the key. Nick Richards leaps back out at him, kicks it to the side. P.J. Washington runs at the shooter, and Miles Kale just simply fakes, slides to his left, and he's got a wide-open three-point shot, which obviously did beat Kentucky. Three-point shooting's a big part of the storyline. Seton Hall outscored Kentucky on three-point baskets 11-5, and it was only the second time all season that the Hall has outscored somebody on threes. It's not what they do really well, but they certainly did on this day, mainly Miles Powell. But Kentucky's defensive effort was so solid in the first half, slipped in the second. And then the shooting, three-point shooting for Kentucky is really letting them down at the moment. Tyler Hero was 0-for-6 on threes. A couple of other quick thoughts. I really thought the game was lost in two spots. The first half, when Kentucky was playing such good defense. They couldn't open up a significant lead because they struggled offensively. And then they were up 64-59 with about 3 minutes to play. And the possessions in that situation for Kentucky, where they had some key turnovers and bad shots and let Seton Hall get back quickly into that game when Kentucky had seemingly forged control. So it's very hurtful when you think about, you know, it's the kind of loss that could really bite you on Selection Sunday. I do think it can be a valuable teaching tool. It's the first time that Kentucky was in a game where it was tight late and you had these possession by possession moments. And this was the first one of those that they've had. And so they should learn from it. Seton Hall certainly, I think, played a little over its head with the threes. And then being at the Garden maybe elevated their game as well as playing against Kentucky. A couple of other quick notes, and we'll get to our first break. Kentucky women's basketball went into number 5 Louisville, fell down by 18, rallied, and got close late, but couldn't quite get over the top of the hill, and they lose 80-75. Ryan Howard had a sensational game, 25 points, 10 boards, 6 assists. They could only force Louisville into 7 turnovers. That was probably the biggest storyline of the game for Kentucky, because it's a big part of what Kentucky is this season, is forcing the other team to turn it over, and to Louisville's credit, they did not turn it over. J.J. Weaver visited Louisville over the weekend, but he told a Rivals writer that he only did it as a favor to the athletics director there, and he's still 100% committed to Kentucky. So I don't think you have to worry about that one. We'll see if something changes. Jaden McDaniels had a big game in front of Cal and Kenny Payne at the Barclays Center over the weekend. Cal stayed up to recruit on that front. And I told you about the Tennessee win over Gonzaga. Very impressive yesterday. Links to the stories that we talk about on the Bud Light Leach Report page at TomLeachKY.com. We are heading to a break. Back with John Clay from the Herald Leader. It's the Leach Report Radio Network, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can follow Tom on Twitter. It's at TomLeachKY.
16 after the top of the hour, we head to the Kentucky Branded Hotline to bring on John Clay from the Lexington Herald Leader, KentuckySports.com. John, we'll start with the great timeout debate. And I saw in your blog in the KentuckySports.com that you are on Cal's side in terms of the strategy of not calling timeout in that late situation, right?
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with him not calling timeout. I mean, you know, you can make a case either way. I think at some point you're going to be in that situation again in the future where maybe you're not able to call timeout or whatever, and they've got it. They've 5 players on the floor, have got to figure it out themselves. And I think, you know, a game in December, I mean, you want to try to win every game, but certainly a game in a loss in December is not going to hurt you that badly. It's not in a non-conference game. You know, you got to give them experience in that situation. There's a school of thought, too, that if you call a timeout, you're letting the other coach set up his defense. So I didn't really have a problem with it. I know they're a young team, but I think that's always been kind of Cal's philosophy in the past. Sometimes he calls timeout, but I think more often than not, in those situations, he believes in letting them play.
And I think that's the way to go just in general, because as soon as, and we saw this with the end of the Kentucky-North Carolina game in the regional final, the team that hits right. The big shot, their celebration, and that's the best time to grab it, go, race down the court, especially if you're, you know, in Kentucky and you just needed to get a 2. You didn't have to have a 3. It's just that Kentucky handled the possession poorly and didn't get much of a shot there. But the thing about it is, whether you're talking about basketball players, your own kids, whatever, is that trial and error can be painful for the person, you know, overseeing it. And there's no way to, you know, as I said, this is the first time this team was in one of those situations. And you have to let them, if you believe that's the way to play, that's your philosophy, then you have to let them sometimes fail to be able to have it eventually work in your favor.
Yeah, and Cal kind of mentioned that in the post-game press conference with us, is now you can go back and look at that play. Okay, what did we do wrong? How did the final play out? And you've got it on film. You can show them, you know, here's what you did. Now here's what you should have done. I go back to the old UK, well, he's not that old. I don't mean to age John Cohen, UK's old baseball coach who's now the AD at Mississippi State. One of Cohen's favorite phrases was figure it out. if a player, if a kid, one of his players or a kid said, you know, he's got a problem with this or a problem with that, Cohen's thing was, you got to figure it out. I mean, that's part of growing up. And I think that's part of the growing process for a team. And I know fans want to win every game. You know, they're upset every time they lose. But to me, I definitely buy into Cal's philosophy that what matters is March. You're preparing your team for March. And as you said, there's going to be some growing pains and some painful things on the way. But hopefully your team progresses and learns from them. And I think that's what Cal wants them to do from that final situation on Saturday.
Best example in this debate that we're talking about is the 2011 team, which couldn't win a game at the end to save its life until it got into the postseason, right, and won almost all every one of them.
Right. Yeah. Experience is the best teacher. And yeah, and you know, like I said, I think the video will help them. You know, I think one of the problems right now, they went through to me, they lost the game, not at the end, but the middle of the first half when they had a chance to really, they were playing good defense. Seton Hall was struggling on offense, but Kentucky couldn't make a basket there for about 10 minutes. All they had was free throws. If they could have extended the lead there, they would have been up at least double, you know, or would have been up double digits at halftime and could have had a chance to put the game away in the first half. But by not being able to score, they let Seton Hall stick around. And I think part of their deal on offense right now is I don't think they've got the point guard position, is which is understandable. You got a couple of freshmen there. Whether you're playing Higgins or you're playing quickly at the point, you know, who knows how to distribute the ball, get the offense in the proper sets, and that's just something that's going to, you know, take time. It's just something that's going to, with experience, take time for those guys to develop. So with all the talk about the final play, I don't think that's where they lost it. I thought it was the middle of the first half where they lost the game.
Yeah, there, and then I thought when they were up 5 with about 3 minutes to go and they had some bad possessions too when they had, you know, they didn't do a good job of closing out that game.
No, same sort of thing. Yeah,
I think the point guard position is I think it will get better, but I think that last play was a good illustration of Ashton. Last couple of games, I've started to see him be a little more assertive offensively, which is what they need. But you know, ideally in that situation, you'd like him to get that ball, race up the floor, and you know, if they didn't get into what they were supposed to get into because somebody wasn't in the right spot, then to, you know, get it to somebody else, attack the basket, and at least get a chance at a foul, if not a shot, up off the glass, maybe an offensive rebound, whatever. And they just seemed a little confused. And I understand that's where you could say, okay, well, you should have called the timeout to help them out there. But I think they can learn from it. And I think the point guard position is something that I think it will get significantly better by March, and it will need to for this team to have a chance to make a run.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree with that. I mean, I think he's still waiting for somebody to, you know, take charge there like Shea did. And it took a few games before Shea asserted himself that, hey, he's the guy. He's going to be the point guard and the leader of the team. I know Cal's kind of looking for the same thing now. But, yeah, you know, I don't, you know, I wouldn't be too discouraged by the loss. I know some people, I mean, I'm looking at Gary Parrish and some other sites that do kind of daily top 25s or whatever. They've dropped Kentucky all the way out of the top 25. I didn't think that was a horrible loss on Saturday. Seton Hall is not that bad. I watched them earlier when they played Louisville, and really they led Louisville the whole way. They kind of broke down at the end, and Louisville came back and beat them. You know, obviously they're not, I don't think Seton Hall is a top 25 team, but I think obviously Miles Powell is a good player who hit some ridiculous shots down the stretch. You know, I think it's a learning experience. You know, it probably doesn't look real good on your resume, but I didn't think that was a terrible loss by any means.
John Clay is with us from the Lexington Herald Leader, KentuckySports.com. We'll take a break, come back for one more segment. And coming up in the second half of the show, we've got John Hale and Jeff Drummond. It's the Leach Report Radio Network.
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Coming up next, it's Kentucky Sports Radio with Matt Jones.
25 after the top of the hour. John Clay is with us from the Lexington Herald Leader, KentuckySports.com. John, it's the giving season. I'm going to give you a column idea here.
Okay.
You've got to rank the top five Kentucky defensive players of all time. And I think there's two interesting things here. You've got, to me on the list, you've got, you know, Josh Allen's now on the list. You got Art Still. You got Lou Michaels. You got Bob Gain. It would be real interesting how people would debate ranking those four guys. The other interesting debate is who's number five. I don't know if there's a clear number five.
No. Yeah, you know, I've always, you know, in my lifetime, I always thought Art Steele was the best defensive player, Kentucky defensive player, you know, that I ever saw, you know, play back on that 77 team, which was so good and especially good on defense. I might put Josh number two or maybe even 1A with Art Steele. I mean, the kind of season that Josh had, how dominant he was. And, you know, that's been proven by all these awards, national awards, you know, that he's received. Boy, that's a tough one on the fifth one.
Yeah.
And how
it's
ranked
the first four, it's easy to come up with.
And Gainer a little bit before my time. Of the guys that I've seen, you know, a guy that I think is maybe kind of overlooked because his teams were not that good was Joe Federspiel, who was a heck of a player had a good NFL and an excellent NFL career. You know, you look back at some of the guys, you know, you're watching, I'm watching the Bears and the Rams last night. The Bears, you know, their defense was so dominant against that great Rams offense and Danny Trevathan on that. He was a heck of a player here. I mean, you look at Wesley Woodyard still playing for the Titans. You know, you got a lot of guys from the Rich Brooks era who were excellent defensive players. I don't know that I'd put him at number five. I don't know who I'd put at number five. That's a tough one.
I was trying to think about that, and it's like there's no natural, you know, other names I'm thinking from, you know, you and I are about the same age. Jim Kovach from back in the 70s. Jerry Blanton on the 77-76 teams was a great player. So it's an interesting little debate there. But it's been an incredible week for Josh Allen, and it seems like the nicest young man, great representative for Kentucky. And I was a little surprised that he maybe didn't get into the top 10 in the Heisman. I'm one of the thousands of voters. I've actually put him second, and I usually try to identify a defensive player just kind of as a protest vote of some sort to give defensive players some consideration or somebody other than a quarterback and a running back. And put him at least third, but I actually put Josh second on my Heisman list, but he didn't get enough to get in the top 10, which was surprising, I thought.
Yeah, it's hard. It's really hard for whatever reason for a defensive guy to break through, and it seems like you know, you've really got to be you know, on the national stage where people are paying attention to you for a considerable amount of time if you're not a player from Alabama or Oklahoma or someplace like that. But to me, Josh will be held up by coaches, college coaches, to kids who are trying to make that decision after their junior season about whether to go to the NFL or not. Here's a guy who definitely made himself a lot more money by coming back for his senior year. And it wasn't just that he came back for his senior year, but what he did between his junior and senior year. You know, Josh worked really hard in the offseason. He put on the extra weight. And the big thing, one of the big things in talking to Mark Stoops, and others around the program, is that he was able to keep his weight during the season. He didn't just put it on in the off season, and then during the season, you know, he lost that weight, or he also that he put on that weight, but it didn't make it, you know, it didn't cause him to be slower, really, or it didn't hurt his game. It enhanced his game. And then the other thing I think too, and I wrote a blog post about this, is that
I think
Mark made a really smart move by hiring Brad White, bringing him in with NFL experience, a really good teacher.
Great point.
And a great technique guy who I think really helped Josh's development as well.
John Clay with the Herald Leader. Thank you much. We'll be right back.
You're tuned to Talk Radio 1080 and The Leach Report. And visit TomLeachKY.com for more news and views on the Cats.
Second half of our Leach Report show for this Monday. We're served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. Just got a text. If you heard the postgame show with Cal on Saturday, he told me in our postgame interview that he had a dental appointment that had already been scheduled for Monday, and he was going to miss the radio show, but I just got a text that it's been rescheduled, and so he is going to be with us tonight on the radio show at 6 Eastern Time. So you can tweet in your questions or post them on the Facebook page or give us a call. John Hale joins us from the Courier-Journal on the Kentucky Branded Hotline. You can read him at courier-journal.com. John, what were your takeaways from what you saw Kentucky do at the Garden against Seton Hall?
Yeah, it was a little bit of a mixed bag because, especially in that first half, it appears that this kind of defensive progress we've seen for the last week or so was continuing, and that had obviously been what John Calipari was most concerned about. So on the one hand, that's good, but on the other hand, they just couldn't hit a shot for most of that first half. And Cal's theory to date had been when the defense gets better, when they build confidence on that end, the offensive issues will get fixed, and that clearly wasn't the case. And then obviously in the second half, it's kind of hard to keep that defensive intensity up when you're not getting rewarded on the scoreboard on your own. And Seton Hall, you know, plays really well offensively. Kentucky does too in the second half. They both score some points, and obviously we remember what happened in the end. But to me, the much bigger concern than, you know, the crazy shots at the end of the game was the fact that they couldn't score for so long in the first half. When you play defense that well, you should be up by more than 6 points at halftime against a team that's, you know, outside the top 50 if you look at KenPom. So that's number one on my list for takeaways and most concerning things for them moving forward.
Was it a case of not getting good shots, taking bad shots? What did you see in terms of the offensive struggles?
I mean, I think it's a little bit of everything. I will say that, you know, if Tyler Hero hits two or three of those six threes, and most of those were, you know, pretty open according to Cal, then we're obviously having a much different conversation today. So I don't know that you can put it, it's probably dangerous to get too worried about it, but I do think that they just did not look very fluid at times. I mean, obviously in the stretches where PJ Washington was very dominant at the beginning of the game, and that stretch in the second half, it seemed like they had an identity. But outside of that, as has been the case several times this year, it seemed like their best offensive option was to throw it to Reed Travis and, you know, hope he gets fouled or goes through traffic and gets a difficult basket. I just don't know. They just seem to be a work in progress offensively right now, and that's basically what Cal told us after the game, said he's got a lot to figure out on that side right now.
You know, and I think part of the improvement will come once somebody claims the point guard job. I kind of sense that it's starting to happen with Ashton Hagans. What about you?
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, obviously his defense is going to be a separator for him with what he can do, shutting down the opponent, his best player, which we saw in the Greensboro game in the second half. I thought he was, you know, pretty good defensively again Saturday. He actually was more of a contributor on offense than he's probably been at any point so far. So I think we're moving in that direction. Emmanuel Quickley is still going to have a role, especially if he hits, you know, a couple threes like he did Saturday, because they need that from somebody right now. I think they still need Quade Green's offense, but he's not a point guard, obviously, in Cal's mind at this moment. So I do think as Ashton Hagans gets more comfortable offensively with what he's doing and distributing, getting his teammates involved, that's definitely going to help. And then you need your other guys to step up. They can't go, what, most of 40 minutes with Keldon Johnson only hitting two, you know, one shot before it's, you know, a half-court shot at the end there. So that those both those things, I think, are really important.
Well, I was just going to go to Keldon because, and I didn't really fully appreciate this till I was looking at the box score after the game, is there's a guy that's your leading scorer, and, you know, in tough times, thinking back even to the Duke game, he was the guy that would seem to be most assertive offensively, and he didn't shoot a free throw, and that's usually a big part of his game, and I think he only took nine shots, and two of those were obviously, you know, heaves at the end of regulation. You know, he had taken about five or six shots for the game, and that's, again, a lot of this comes back to, I think, when somebody asserts himself as point guard, maybe they'll have a little better understanding. Okay, we need to get Keldon some touches here. We need to get him the ball in some place where he can score with it.
Yeah, for sure. And I asked Cal after the game what he thought of Keldon's performance, because obviously without Keldon, they're not in overtime. With the shot he hits at the end, he gets the three in overtime. He gives them the lead very briefly before the game winner. Without him, they're not there. But for most of the game, he was really quiet. And Cal said they need to do a better job getting involved, which to me means that there are some other things going on there outside of him with the point guard, with the other guys, in terms of doing what they're supposed to be doing to get him the ball at times. And maybe they find a way to tweak the offense a little bit to where he's playing with the ball in his hands more. I don't know, but they certainly, if they're going to, you know, make a run in the tournament, if they're going to be what they can be, it involves Keldon Johnson being much more involved than he was for the vast majority of the game Saturday.
PJ Johnson's, or PJ Washington's, a bit of an enigma in that there are stretches where he disappeared. Even for a stretch in that game Saturday. It was great in the first half, and then for the longest stretch of the second half, he had two free throws, and then all of a sudden just becomes a one-man wrecking crew in the last 8-9 minutes of the game, and was, you know, had he hit all of his free throws but one, had he made the other one, he'd have had a 30-point game.
Yeah, I think that game was a pretty accurate summary of BJ's entire career to date, and that there were stretches where he just looked like clearly the best player on the floor, and then there were stretches where you forgot he was out there at all, and it happened within the same game, and it's hard to, you know, criticize too much for a game where you're almost, you know, at 29-12 or whatever it ended up being. But there were certainly moments in that game where he disappeared, and we've seen him do that too often, and Cal said it after the game, basically, that guy you were in that stretch in the second half, that's the guy you have to be all the time. And especially as these young guys try and figure it out, these freshmen on Kentucky's team that they're going to have to rely on so much, they need one of those sophomores to step up and carry this team at times. And PJ's the obvious candidate to do it. He just needs to do it more consistently.
Talk with John Hale from Courier-Journal.com. On Twitter, it's at @John_Hale_CJ. Kevin Willard, the Seton Hall coach, was asked to compare Kentucky and Louisville since he has played them both on the last two Saturdays. What did he say?
Yeah, he said basically that Kentucky has a much more physical presence inside, which is not surprising with PJ and Reed Travis and, you know, Nick Richard and EJ Montgomery too, but that he thought Louisville was clearly the better shooting team and it wasn't really even close, which I don't think that would surprise any Kentucky fans at the moment, given kind of some of their offensive struggles, especially their struggles at times on Saturday. So it's going to be really interesting. We're, you know, just less than 3 weeks out now from the rivalry game, and I think Chris Mack's team has surprised some people and obviously played Indiana close this week, has a better win than Kentucky right now, and Michigan State has been more tested than Kentucky has just in terms of the schedule. I think that was a game that a lot of people going into the year just assumed easy Kentucky win, and it doesn't look like that's going to be the case anymore.
Jumping over to football, you've got a story at Courier-Journal.com about players fans should pay attention to during these bowl practices with an eye toward the future. Who are the names?
Yeah, it's important to remember that always during bowl practices, we hear a lot about young guys, and you know, they call it an extra spring. You get your 15 practices or whatever to look at what's going to happen moving forward. And with Josh Allen playing in the game, that's obviously a boost for the chances of beating Penn State, but you would still expect in practice they're going to kind of monitor his reps and make sure they protect him, especially with all this traveling he's doing with the award circuit. So it's a really opportunity for young guys to play. We saw a little bit of it in that Louisville game just because of the score. Kavassier smoked the running backs, a guy I think we're going to see more of just because they need to find somebody to replace Benny Snell almost certainly. At Josh's position, they're going to need to look at some young outside linebackers, whether it's Jordan Wright or Kenjara Daniel, who's not a young guy, but somebody who redshirted this year. And the other thing to remember in this conversation is with that new redshirt rule, all these guys before you say, oh, these redshirt guys are playing really well in bowl practices, we'll see them in the spring, but we'll see them next fall. Now all those guys can play in the game. So if somebody comes out and has a real standout, you know, month of practice in bowl practices, they can also help them win against Penn State, because that's just the new rule allows them to do that, and they don't have anybody who's at risk of losing a redshirt by playing in that game. So I think that's definitely an important storyline to watch over the next month.
John, thanks for the time.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
It's John Hale from the CJ. Quick break, and back with Jeff Drummond from Cats Illustrated on the Leach Report Radio Network. We're served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
Look for the Leach Report on Facebook. Show updates, contests, and other cool stuff. Check it out today.
Welcome back into the Leach Report for a Monday. We are going to the Kentucky Branded Hotline to chat with Jeff Drummond from CatsIllustrated.com. J. Drum, your take on the great timeout debate that is out there for fans to talk about in the wake of the loss to Seton Hall. Do you like taking a timeout there? Do you like letting them play on?
You know, I've kind of gone back and forth on that with Tom and a little bit. Inconclusive. I think I would say in my mind, I think it could have worked out either way. I could see good arguments for both cases, but with such a young team and knowing that you've had a little bit of disorganization at times on the offensive end of the floor, I probably would have erred on the side of taking it there, taking my chances with whatever Seton Hall counters with defensively and trying to get a better look than the Cats got, and maybe even trying to get somebody going to the rim and looking to get fouled, because that's really the strength of Kentucky's offense right now is getting to that foul line where they've been really good.
Yeah, and the shot that Seton Hall hit to ultimately win the game for Miles Kale, was watching it back yesterday. I think it was McKnight, their point guard, that drove into the lane. And, you know at that point, only a three can beat you. And this is a guy that's really not been much of a shooter that drives into a lane. Three guys converge on him. And then they get the kick out to the top of the key, and then the pass to the wing, and a shot fake, and a step to the left, and just a wide open look. But I was saying earlier, there's a much more experienced Gonzaga team that screwed up a defensive possession equally as poorly against Tennessee. How you leave Admiral Schofield wide open when he's killed you, I don't know, but they did.
Of all guys, and I think, you know, sometimes maybe players get kind of beat over the head so much with, getting beat off straight line, drives to the basket. We've heard that from Cal all season long. I think they were really kind of geared up with that line of thinking on that possession and maybe overreacted, but some great ball movement too. Sometimes we got to credit the other team. You know, Seton Hall made the extra pass, may have passed the ball three or four times on that possession and really got the guy a good look for the shot.
Talking with Jeff Drummond from CatsIllustrated.com. Kentucky's got Utah at home, which I think lost to BYU decisively over the weekend to fall to 4-4. But then you go to Chicago to face Carolina, and Louisville certainly looks like it will be a bear of a challenge at their place the Saturday after Christmas. So what's in the short term, where can Kentucky make the most improvement, do you think, with the extra practice time?
Well, I think it's some of the things they've been focused on, all season long. I think the defense is still the priority. I think the offense is going to be fine, even though we saw some ugly moments in that game, especially in the first half against Seton Hall. But continuing to shore up that defense and trying to find ways to eliminate those three-point shots, because looking at the season stats, after the game the other day, see where the opponents hit 32 more threes than Kentucky has on the season. That's a plus 96 in that column. And that was just staggering when I saw that number. And really hard through nine games to, accumulate a number that large, giving up almost 10 points, more than 10 points actually, per game than the opponent from the arc than you get. So that's going to be really hard to overcome in a lot of these games that figure to be close going into conference play.
No, you make a great point, because that's, it can be a little demoralizing too, having to overcome that particular type of deficit on threes. Some of it obviously has got to be curtailing the other guys' threes. Cal has said he thinks this is his best three-point shooting team. Do you think we'll see that over time?
I do. I'm kind of an optimist on that, and I don't think he's blowing smoke, because they have the ability to shoot it, from four to five spots on the floor, and most of those guys really aren't shooting at their, potential right now, especially, Tyler Hero is a guy they've got to get going. There's no doubt that he's a skilled offensive guy, and I don't have any explanation for why it's not dropping yet, but, we've seen it with some guys in the past before. Like that Devin Booker, I think, went through a stretch, even as great a shooter as he is, where it just wasn't falling for him for the first part of the season. And then once it did, it didn't seem like the guy could miss.
Let's jump to football, Jeff. Back in 06, when Kentucky went to that first Music City Bowl, they had Stevie Johnson, who had been highly touted, really hadn't done much that first year, but through the bowl practices, we kept hearing about what an impression he was making, and then he went down and had a great bowl game that set the stage for a fantastic final season. Is there anybody that has played a small role, or maybe even not much of a role, during the regular season that you could see making some kind of an impact in the bowl game?
Oh, that's a really good question. I haven't given that a lot of great thought to date. It would be a neat storyline if it was somebody like Josh Pascal. You know, I don't know if physically he is up to that point yet, you know, ready where he could do that. But you got to think, since they got him some action late in the season, and he's going to have, you know, another month under his belt, that maybe he can be a guy that can give them a little extra boost in that game.
Yeah, I could see that. Another one I thought was maybe Ahmad Wagner. I know he didn't show up much in the Louisville game, but they had been getting him some reps prior to that, and nobody's had a greater impact without actually having a pass reception.
Yeah, he's been kind of a secret weapon with the ability to draw those yellow flags.
Yeah, I think it's 4 or 5 pass interference penalties, so he's accounted for a significant amount of yardage. Have you looked much at the matchup to have an early thought on Kentucky's chances against Penn State?
You know, looking at it just initially, it seems like almost two pretty similar teams right now. And the way they go about their business. And I expect it could be an exciting game for that reason. I don't see a big edge either way. And just looking at the numbers. And Penn State has an experienced veteran quarterback, McSorley, who figures to loom large in that thing. But I'm interested to see how, you know, Josh Allen and the front line against Penn State's offensive line can get some pressure on him and make that a little interesting.
Jeff, thank you much.
Thank you, Tom.
You can read him at catsillustrated.com, Jeff Drummond, and we are heading to a break. When we come back, we'll wrap up this edition of the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
This is where the Big Blue Nation gathers. It's Talk Radio 1080 and the Leach Report, followed by Kentucky Sports Radio.
Final segment of the Leach Report for this Monday. Donato slice of Wildcat history. A birthday, Cameron Mills. Celebrating a birthday. Happy birthday to Cameron from the 98 championship team and the 96 championship team. This day in... I can't remember the year. I didn't write down the year on this. It was back in the 50s. Bob Burrows set a single-game rebounding record for Kentucky, grabbed 34 against Temple. Speaking of Temple, ironic that Keldon Johnson's shot to send the game to overtime from midcourt happened almost to the day that Vernon Hatton hit a 47-footer to send a game to a third overtime against Temple. The thing was that shot's gone down in Kentucky history because Kentucky won the game in that third overtime. Unfortunately, it didn't happen here. We talked about that earlier. Famous shots for Kentucky that would have been more famous had Kentucky been able to close it out and get the win. But that game, Vernon Hatton's famous shot, great call from Claude Sullivan, was on December the 7th back in 57. That's going to do it for us. Back tomorrow with Larry Vaught and more on the Leach Report.
To the Leach Report. Make sure you check out the podcast page at TomLeachKY.com whenever you miss a show. And be sure to follow.